Ladies, gentlemen, thank you again for clicking play, for using that index finger or that fat thumb and hitting that play button. We are on episode 2-5. Episode 2-5 is going to be about question and answer. If you go to the comment section, you will see March the 14th and there's a few questions. So let's get into it. Let's get into the meat of potato and try to help some of your questions with some answers. And the first one I'm looking at, and I'm going to try to dissect it. He didn't ask me if I had a capital to put these properties on a contract. This confused me. It is my understanding that you don't need any money to wholesale properties. Can you give me some insight on this? All right. So the first thing, I believe this investor slash buyer is fishing for. And again, when you talk to individuals, you're going to create a story that is an honest story. You're going to let them know you're just starting out. You're kind of getting traction. And you're going to tell them your side of the story. And hopefully they're going to tell you their side. And sometimes the buyers, their side is a little bit more cockier, a little bit more beefed up than there actually is. And I mean by that is some buyers will say they buy anything and they do this and they do that. And in reality, they can't buy a McDonald's Happy Meal. And I'm not saying that in a mean way. I'm just saying that they have their own story as well. So when you're coming on as a newbie and you're telling your story and you're being real and you're being realistic that, hey, I'm just starting out. I'm just learning about wholesale. And, you know, my goal is to try to start tying up about one property a week or maybe a month. That's my goal. And you're telling them that you're just starting out, give you the benefit of the doubt. You're willing to do some homework. You're willing to do some groundwork to get them that right property. As for the buyer, when you first meet the buyer, again, depending on where they're at, and especially wholesalers, they're very big. They like to talk up things a lot. They like to add a little bit more to their story than reality. But for instance, this in your question, that buyer is asking you, what do you have to tie up the property under contract? And that is a purchase and sale agreement. A purchase and sale agreement is what you're going to need to tie up the property. So again, if you're letting them know that you're a beginner, but you're ready to do some work, he's asking you, how are you tying them up? And the answer is you need to have a purchase and sale agreement. And that's a contract. And a contract can be anything from 1 to 2 to 3 pages. And that contract pretty much is going to have you as the buyer, whoever the seller is, which is the homeowner, and then the price, the address, the tax ID, and then have some kind of agreement when you're going to close, and that is a purchase and sale agreement. So he's asking you, what resources are you using to tie up the properties, and that's you're using contract. You're using a purchase and sale agreement to tie it up. And hopefully I answer that correctly. So you need to have a purchase and sale agreement. If you don't have one, this is that great time again. And I have a lot of those purchase and sale agreement, and that's the course that I went through, the $38,000. And then I went around as well, and I paid for some of these contracts to have to tie up the property so I can sell it. Because remember, again, when you sit down with a homeowner and you're looking to buy that property, you got to have a purchase and sale agreement saying, you, this is me, we agreed on this price at this property, and we're going to close by this time. So if you're interested in a purchase and sale agreement, I would recommend one, that meetup or that real estate group. I believe that, you know, they will have some purchase and sale agreement around. So you have to network with someone in that group to say, hey, you know, do you have a blank purchase and sale agreement? You know, I have some purchase and sale agreement, and I have to go back and look if it's Washington State, because every state is a little bit different. For Washington State, I have those contracts that I paid for. And I'd be happy to hand those off to people too as well. But they're Washington State. If you're in other states, there could be just a slight difference in purchase and sale agreement. I know Pennsylvania has a different purchase and sale agreement. Texas has a different purchase and sale agreement. But a purchase and sale agreement is a very general purchase and sale agreement. Starting out in the beginning, I also, you know, it's very simple to buy a house. And it was that simple to where I, you know, I had a guy that showed me that all you need is a napkin to purchase a house. And sure, no one would probably want to use a napkin to purchase a house, but all you need is a paper that says you as the buyer, the owner as the seller, the purchase price, the property full address, the property ID number or tax number, when are you going to close, and how much are you going to commit to tie up the property with cash? So hopefully that answers that question where he was asking you, what resources do you have to put the properties on a contract? And that resource would be a purchase and sale agreement. That would be the first thing, is to have a purchase and sale agreement. And again, that can be anywhere from 1, 2 to 3 pages, or it can be 10, 11, 12 pages. But from lesson learned and from experience, if you're sitting down with a homeowner, you want to have as minimum paper as possible. You want to have the least amount of paper as possible. You sit down and try to give them a book of 20 pages to sign. Good luck on trying to get that signature and for you to buy that house. But if you get a purchase and sale agreement that is 1 page to 2, no more than 3 pages, everyone is okay with 3 pages. It's just 3 pages they have to sign, and then you have control over the property. So try to keep your pages to 1, 2, or 3. Again, if you're looking to look into my purchase and sale agreement, I can definitely help you guys on that one. But just keep in mind, these are contracts that I had to come out of my pocket. And that's something you guys are going to have to do too as well. There's nothing to be shy about it. But sometimes you have to do that. And I think in a couple of episodes, I mentioned that's something that's going to be a part of your learning. It's coming out of your pocket and taking that debit card or credit card out and making a purchase. Because that's how I started my journey in learning. I wanted to learn. I wanted to be around people that had the knowledge, but then they had the resources. And that resource costs money. But you need that resource, so you don't go blind or don't look left or right and try to say, I don't need it, because it costs money. But you want to go ahead and just say, you know what, this is where I need to come out of my pocket. And I need to buy this purchase and sale agreement, because that purchase and sale agreement is a very vital thing to wholesale. That purchase and sale agreement is a vital thing to buy or sell a property. Start learning that language of a purchase and sale agreement is very important as well. So, for out of state, if I go back, I think I can look. I'm sure there's maybe a way to tweak my purchase and sale agreement to work for you guys too as well, out of state of Washington. So, your resources, a purchase and sale agreement. And again, you want to keep your purchase and sale agreement down to 1 to 3 pages. Anything more than that, you're going to get people nervous, and they're going to ask for, maybe I need to get my lawyer to look at this. And then after the lawyer look at it, they said, yeah, you're not going to, this is not going to happen. So to keep it simple and straight, you want to do 1 to 3 properties, no more. All right. So that is what you have to tie or control the property. The next question you have, you said something, it is my understanding that you don't need any money to wholesale properties. Can you give me insight on this, Courtney? All right, so in real estate, and I think I've said this before in a couple of the episodes, in real estate, which is the most beautiful and the most flexible vehicle to make money without putting money in. And that is 100% true, and I'm a living proof of that. You truly do not need to put money in to make money. So you're understanding you don't need money to make money. And I was trying to break this down a little bit for you so you can understand. Let's see how to do this. So for wholesale, whenever you do your purchase and sale agreement, all right? So remember again, that's a vital piece of equipment you need to be able to wholesale, a purchase and sale agreement, all right? That's a vital tool you need, a document you need, all right? And then in that purchase and sale agreement, you're going to have you as the buyer, them as the seller, and then you're going to have the address, the property ID, and then you're going to have how long you're going to take to close the property, and you're going to have earnest money. And that earnest money is a good faith where you're going to put down on the property. And when you're playing off the market, and when I say playing off the market, when you're dealing with a broker, owner, one-to-one, or you're doing off-market deals where you need to wholesale it, there's no rule in how much that earnest money can be. There's no regulation on how much you need to put down for an earnest money. And legally, and here we go again, legally. But then again, you can always find and talk to your lawyer about this as well. You only need $1 to bind a contract between the owner and you, the buyer. You only need $1. As long as you put $1. So if you write a check, right, for $1, and everybody signed and agreed, you are now in a binding contract. If some way or shape or form you cannot find an investor to buy that property, and the date that you chose to close, which hopefully you put 30 to 45 days, because the more days you put out to close, the more time you have to find a buyer. So you always want to try to put as much date as possible out, so you have enough time to fish, to take that property that you have and market it to a buyer, or bring it to the meetup meetings and tell other buyers what you have under contract. So you always want to project that date to be 35, 40, 45 days if possible. And if it can be longer and the buyer and the broker and the seller is okay with it, then make it longer. But in an event that you put 30 to 40 days and somehow you cannot find a buyer or investor to buy this property because you're trying to wholesale it, then you have $1. And you can make it a promissory note. And a promissory note is just saying, I, my name, promise to pay $1 XYZ. Or you can have a check, $1, all right? And that check, you know, you will have that check to where if you don't close within that 35 to 40 days, you will lose $1. Okay, so let's say the owner is, you know, pissed off and you said you were going to buy it, and at the same time you're looking for a new buyer because you're trying to wholesale it and you didn't close on the 35 to 40 day that you projected to the owner, then you're potentially going to lose $1. Will that owner actually go after you for $1? Probably not. Because it's, what is that worth to go after you for $1? All right. So you don't need money too much. You just need, you know, you don't need money. Or you can get $1 from someone else. It doesn't have to be your money. It can be $1 from someone else. All right. Or if somehow you're writing this contract up and the owner and you as the buyer and you're sitting down, you just let the owner know. You have to explain to them, hey, you know, I'm looking to buy this house and I'm going to put it 40 to 45 days out. And you know what? We're just going to put $1 for the earnest money, because all we need is $1 to be in contract. And if somehow they're like, no, I don't want $1. That's nothing. I don't want $1. You're going to, You know, that's not my time. Then you can ask them, because remember, again, when you're off the market, it's an open field to negotiate. If you were on the market and you had a broker and you were on the MLS and everyone is seeing a property, then you have a regulation, you have rules, you have highly recommend things you have to do. And one of them would be, if you were on the market, an earnest money is usually $1,000. And it sometimes, depending on the cost of the property, it can be anywhere from $500 would be recommended. And again, it's all recommendation. It's not something that's really a rule, but the brokers would recommend it. And so everyone follows the recommendation, right? So on the market, you usually have a recommended of $500 to $1,000. If you're buying like a HUD property, they usually want 10% or whatever the asking price. So when you're on the market, you have these rules and structure you have to be in. And you follow what is recommended, which is usually a broker-driven recommendation. But when you're off the market, there is no recommendation. There is really no rule. As long as you and the owner agree to it, you guys are good to go. So you will first try a dollar. And again, you can write a promissory. I, XYZ, promise to pay $1 to, you know, XYZ owner. And that could be a promissory note. And that promissory note, you promise to pay a dollar. Or you can write a check for $1 and try to go that way. And then if somehow the $1 doesn't work, then you start your negotiation, you know. And then your worst case scenario could be the $500 check or promissory note. Or you do $1,000, but they're all in a very good, you have opportunity to negotiate. So to sum it up, you don't need money to make the deal work. And it doesn't have to be your money. Again, I've tied up property with $1. My first wholesale was, I believe, if I go back, I gotta go back and try to remember. My first wholesale was $1. And when I tied it up, and this is how you're gonna do it as well. So you're gonna need a purchase and sale agreement to bind you guys together. Then you're going to need some kind of commitment financially. So I use $1 to tie up that property, right? And so then I have a purchase and sale agreement, and I have either a promissory note or a check for $1. And that right there goes to an escrow company. So that's another thing you're going to need to get on your team. You're going to need to find a good title and escrow. And you're going to need to find a good title and escrow that is friendly with investors. Because a good friendly title and escrow would understand a wholesale. So you have to find a good friendly title and escrow company. You can't go to every escrow company and assume that they're going to know what a wholesale means to you. As you start learning that word wholesale, it becomes familiar. But some people, they only play on the market. They only play where the rules and everything is at. And to them, wholesale, they don't understand it. They only think that you can buy a house only with a broker or sell a house with a broker. And that is not true. You can buy a house without a broker. You can sell a house without a broker. As long as the person that's doing it has the right amount of knowledge to know the numbers and know what numbers and what right looks like number wise. But some people think you need a broker to sell your house, or you need a broker to buy a house, and that's incorrect. It's similar to thinking if you need a car salesman to buy a car, or you need a car salesman to sell your car, and that's not true. So trying to go back to that, you want to find a good investor-friendly title and escrow company. And you might think in your head, oh, Courtney, where do I find that? right? I'm sure that's the next thing in your head. How do I find a good investor-friendly title and escrow? This is where, again, you're going to build your team. Again, the more people I interact with, the more people I help per day, the more successful I become. The more problems you solve, the more successful you become. And one of them is building a team. And that team, right, has a broker, has a contractor, has a photographer, because that's your person that's going to take your photos, has a staging person, has a title and escrow. And that's part of your team is a title and escrow. And these are all the people that you're going to give work to because they want to work. They love to do those specialty that they're doing. So you need to find a title and escrow that is investor friendly. And how do you do that? One, you can start getting on the phone and use Google and search for title and escrow. And you can start calling up some of those escrow company. And you can get on the phone and say, hey, you know, I'm an investor in this area. Again, a story, your honest story, it's very helpful because if you tell your story again to this title and escrow company saying, hey, you know, my name is Courtney and, you know, I'm looking to buy a couple properties off the market. I just wanted to see if you guys are investor friendly. I'm looking to do some off-market deals, probably one or two a month, and then I'm looking to possibly do some wholesaling as well. Do you understand how a wholesale work and how to take my fee out if I find another buyer and put the owner and the new buyer together and there's a wholesale fee involved? Is that something you guys are familiar with? And that's one way you can figure out if they're investor friendly. Another way, without creating the wheel or reinventing the wheel, if you want to say, is the networking you're in of real estate people. You know, birds that stick together flock together. So if you're in a network of people that is real estate that is investing and are doing deals, or in that buyer you're talking about that is asking you these questions, or you find a wholesaler that is on the sign when the bandit sign, or you go to the meetup and you're sitting down, you're talking to these people, or you're talking to a broker from the meetup company. These are all people that would know an investor-friendly company because these are the people that a little bit think outside of the box and understand outside of the rules of real estate. So you can find an investor-friendly title company by Googling your escrow and title company that's in your area and calling some up and tell them that story that I just told you a few minutes ago. Tell them what your journey you're planning on doing. Tell them you are an investor and you're looking to acquire a few properties off the market. Some of them you want to buy and some of them you might not gonna be able to buy because you might be too overwhelmed and you would like to wholesale that property. Are they familiar with a wholesale where you have a contract with an owner and you are the buyer, but you find another buyer? And you change the from you assign the contract to another buyer. Are they familiar with that and how you can get your fee for assigning it to a new buyer? And if they say, yeah, we do that all the time, then there you go. That contact needs to be in your phone now. That person becomes part of your team. If a broker understands wholesaling or they know a company title and escrow, that broker and that person becomes part of your team. If a contractor, that person becomes part of your team. If there's a photographer, that person becomes part of your team. So you get it. You have to build that team. And it's almost like a football team and you need every one of them. And every one of them play a role. So this business you're going into where you want to start to wholesale and then eventually flip a house, it's a teamwork. It's a teamwork and a people help in business. The more people you help, the more successful you become in that business. And you have to interact with these people daily. You know, I talked about the contractor, how it's almost like a marriage, just the last episode. So all these team members are different, you know, from marriage to your spouse, to your cousins, your brothers. They all play a vital role in your team and in your family when it comes to business. And you have to nurture and give good business to each one of them and continue doing that to keep growing and get better and better. So hopefully I answer that question to where you don't need money. You need a contract, and you might, you know, you need a promissory note to say you're going to pay a dollar, or you need a check that says you're going to pay a dollar, right? But you don't need a large amount of money. Because when I first did that deal back in the wholesale and deals that I've done now, I put a dollar down because, again, this is off the market. There's no recommended amount that I need to put for earnest money. It's whatever myself and the owner negotiate. And I just need to let the owner know that, hey, guy, I'm going to do all this and I'm going to commit to this. And the earnest money, we just only need a dollar to make it a binding contract. So why don't we just put, and I'm going to put a dollar, or already have it filled out already. That way it'd be easier to go discuss. But we only need a dollar to make this contract official, to make it binding. So I'm just going to put that down, a dollar. And I plan, and I expect to pay it XYZ. And one of the things too, again, as you build your buyer list, this is how you don't need money to make money. When you build that buyer list, let's say worst case scenario, you have $1,000, right? Because you're thinking about in your head right now, and I understand you might not believe it's possible, and that's okay because you haven't been through it yet. But let's say in your head, you're like, man, I just don't see how I can tie up a house for $1. I just don't see it. Well, as you're going out and you're looking to tie up properties, you're still building that list, which I see you're doing. You're building your buyer list. One of the things, if you have a good property, let's say worst case scenario, you have to put $1,000, right? Again, everything is negotiable when you're off the market. But let's say the owner's like, this is a great deal. This house is nice, right? The numbers look good. It's ugly. They want to let it go. You know, on the market, it can go for a lot more. And you have a deal in your face right now. And the owner's like, nope, I need $1,000. Then, let's say you don't have $1,000, right? You can make a promissory note for $1,000. And you can have that promissory note due in 3 weeks. That's when you need to deliver that promissory note. And if you have built your buyer list, then when you find, if you have a buyer and you tied it up and you find a buyer and the buyer is interested in the home, then you tell that new buyer, I need $1,000 from you and it needs to be to me by this date. And you take that person, $1,000, the new buyer, the assigned buyer, and you take that $1,000 and you have him deposit that $1,000 into that title and escrow. And now all of a sudden, you just tied up a property with none of your money. You took a new buyer money, $1,000, to deposit it into escrow. And there you go. You did a deal without your money. And so now when this deal finally goes through and it closes, and you made your 10, 15, or 5, 12, 2 grand, 3 grand, 4 grand, depending on how the spread of the wholesale, you just made profit without putting any money in because you found someone else to put the $1,000 down, or you found someone else to put the $1,000 down, or you found someone else to put $200 down, and at $200, you had someone else put the $200 down into escrow. So you put a promissory note, and you make the promissory note as due date as further away as possible. So you have time to find a buyer, and that new buyer needs to deliver it before the promissory note date. So hopefully that makes sense. So you do not need money in wholesale. And worst case scenario, you can use a dollar out of your own pocket, whether it's a promissory note or check, to tie up a property that's going to make you profit. And worst case, it doesn't happen, or you don't fulfill, or you can't find a buyer, and the owner, the date comes for you to deliver or sell the home, and you can't, then you lose a dollar. Or if you tie up the property and you don't have a dollar, find a new buyer and the new buyer looks and he likes everything, he needs to put a dollar into escrow and you give him the timeline he needs to put it in. And he will be the new assigned buyer. And if it's not a dollar, if it's not 200 bucks, if it's 500 bucks, if it's 1,000, then you tell the new buyer where and when to deliver that money. And you came out of your pocket with nothing. So that's how you can make money in real estate without doing anything. And when I gave a dollar to the escrow and title company, they didn't cash that check. So they're not going to go run and cash a dollar check. So they kept the check. They didn't even cash it. So when I found a new buyer, which the new buyer, I had them come in with $1,000 just so I know they were serious. And that way they didn't run away. I knew they were going to stay because they had $1,000, which was non-refundable. So I required them to have $1,000 because I wanted them to put their skin in the game. And if they fall through on buying a home, I will at least have $1,000. And out of the $1,000, if I didn't pay for the home, if I didn't buy the home the homeowner had and he came after me, out of the $1,000, I would give him a dollar. And so I will walk away with a $999 profit, and I'll give the owner a dollar because that's what I owed him. So you see how that works? When you're off the market, you can negotiate any number. Whatever number you negotiate, right, you tie it up. And the number you negotiate, you make it as far out as possible the due date for that number. Go hurry up, find a buyer. If you already have one, great. You tell that new buyer, you create a rule for the new buyer. So if it's a dollar, you might want to tell the new buyer you need to put down $300, $500, because you want that buyer to put money in the game. And you want to probably make that fee a non-refundable. So when they put that money down, they're not getting it back if they don't buy that home. And if somehow they don't buy that home, that money becomes your money. Then you can take that money and pay the whatever money you negotiated with the owner that you couldn't fulfill because the other buyer couldn't fulfill it. And that's how that works. Hopefully that makes sense. And hopefully that makes sense to where, again, you do not need money to make money. You can promise a note of what you're going to pay, and you can make that as far out as possible. Go find your buyer. Let them pay that note, or let them pay more than that note, that promissory note, or that earnest money. So that way you have them more into the game, and if they don't fulfill, you can take their money to pay off the promissory or the earnest money you agreed to the owner, and you can walk away with the remaining amount. And that's how you make money with no money in real estate. All right, so hopefully that answered your question on that topic. Hopefully that answered your question. My name is Courtney Lindsay, and you can find us at yellowribbonventures.com. Or you can find us at Yellow Ribbon Ventures LLC on Facebook, Instagram. Hopefully this was good information for you. Again, if this is good information, share this information to someone else. Knowledge with applied action gives you results. So hopefully you're taking this and you're applying it and you're getting the results you're going to need. All right. Thank you, guys. Bye.